and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a weekly podcast bringing readers and writers of Australian fiction together. I'm Claudine Tennellis. As an avid reader and passionate advocate for Australian fiction, I make it my mission to spotlight local talent. So if you're looking for your next read or simply want to learn more about the Australian literary scene, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and relax.
This episode is brought to you by HarperCollins Publishers Australia.
Morning to everyone tuning in on this crisp Sydney winter's day. Today I have the pleasure of chatting with a new Australian author whose debut novel, Mystic Ridge, was recently released by HQ Fiction. Lucy Lever is a former social worker who lives in the bush on Sydney's coastal fringe with her husband. As proof that it is never too late to follow your dreams, Lucy decided to give creative writing a go later in life. And now here we are. On frequent visits to family on the New South Wales North Coast, Lucy found inspiration for Mystic Ridge, a delightful contemporary novel with a fun twist on the rural romance genre. So without further ado, let me welcome Lucy to the podcast. Hi, Lucy.
Oh, thank you so much for that very warm welcome, Claudine. That was a lovely introduction. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. And congratulations on the publication of your debut novel. How does it feel to finally have a book out in the world?
Oh, it feels surreal. It feels as surreal as the book is surreal. Some of the themes in the book are very surreal. It's hard to believe that it's actually happening, that, you know, Rachel Donovan from HQ loved my book enough to publish it, and hopefully readers love it as well. So very exciting time.
Fantastic. Is it how you imagined it would be?
It's a little bit more demanding than I expected, even though, you know, I don't have a huge number of events, just getting organised and making sure that everybody who attends the events that I am organising is comfortable and enjoys them. It's a big job, but it's a wonderful job too, and I feel very fortunate.
What has been the best part of your journey to publication to date, do you think?
Oh, I think it was the moment that my agent, Alexandra Nalous, called me when I was on my way to pick up my grandson from, I think it was preschool at that stage, actually, and said that the book was going to an acquisitions meeting. It was very likely that it would be published. I could hardly believe that was true. It was really exciting. That was a wonderful moment. And I didn't come down from it for several months afterwards, especially once HQ HarperCollins decided to publish it.
Oh, I can only imagine how exciting that moment must have been for you.
Yeah, it was a great moment. And, you know, you have to get on with the rest of your life. I had to get to the preschool on time. I was running a bit late by then, and bring him home and, you know, feed him and play games with him. So life resumed normality fairly quickly, but it was a great moment.
Yeah, fantastic. So Lucy, for those people who haven't been fortunate enough to read Mystic Ridge as I have, I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about the story.
Okay, well, the story's set in a fictional version of Mullumbimby, which is a kind of counterculture town on the New South Wales North Coast. It's the story of Claire, who is a sole parent and a tarot reader who's struggled with the idea of home as a child and as a young person. So it's a really big deal for her when it looks like her rented rainforest home is going to be bulldozed for a development, which is a mega wellness centre for international jet setters. And this is a rainforest that she's carefully nurtured and regenerated for years. So she's really quite devastated, and she decides that she's not going to take this lying down. And on the way, she meets Leo, who's a journalist for the local paper, which is inspired by the Byron Bay Echo. And he's convinced that there are two sides to every story. And unfortunately, or fortunately, Claire can only see one. So that's a source of conflict throughout the book. And there are some mystical elements. There's a bit of a ghostly presence in the book as well, just to make it, as you say, a little bit different to perhaps some other rural romance books that have been published.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And I really enjoyed those mystical and, you know, somewhat paranormal elements of this book, if we can call it that. Really, really cool. I know that I said that visits up to the New South Wales North Coast inspired the book generally, but was there a particular event or person that compelled you to begin writing this story?
It was a writing prompt for a Romance Writers of Australia short story competition, which was to write a story that featured a tiger's eye. So I was working as a social worker at the time. I immediately thought of a tarot reader who was living a life that was very different to the one I was living, which was really quite a mundane life, commuting to work and back again. And it sort of set my imagination on fire. And the other characters kind of sprang up from there. And I forgot to mention earlier, actually, that part of the book is set at an alternative version of the Woodford Music Festival called Luminescence. And I've moved it from summer to winter because I find Woodford really hot. So, and I've been going to Woodford for many, many years. So that inspired the story as well. But yeah, in terms of a single event, it was just joining romance writers, entering this competition and deciding after years of writing what I now call misery lit, which was my attempt at writing literary fiction that just really backfired. My writers group used to hate me for it. I decided that I was going to have fun and play and, you know, really, really enjoy the process of writing. And I, in doing so, I finally found my voice, which was actually a more commercial voice than I'd expected.
Yeah. Misery lit. That is a fantastic way of describing it. And I think so many people often do aspire to be literary writers and then find that, like you, their voice is much more commercial, but no less important, I think.
Yeah, well, we all know, well, romance writers and readers certainly know that romance is very readily dismissed, but it's actually an art and a craft and requires a great deal of training and skill to write well. It's very challenging. It's just a different genre, a different form to what's called literary fiction. And when it's well written, it's just wonderful to read. There are many romance writers who I admire and who've inspired my writing who are really vastly underrated, just as Leanne Moriarty was greatly underrated. I mean, I'm not comparing myself to Leanne Moriarty for a second, but, you know, because she had a commercial voice rather than what's construed as a literary voice. It took her a long time to be recognised and to be invited to mainstream literary festivals in Australia. I do feel that romance writers are still marginalised and not recognised for the wonderful work so many of them do.
Yeah, we could have a whole podcast episode on just that topic alone.
That's right.
Now, as you said, the story is set in the fictional town of Lillipilli, which was based on the town of Mullumbimby up on the New South Wales North Coast. How difficult did you find it to construct the town of Lillipilli and make it more fictional than Mullumbimby?
Well, there are some aspects of Mullumbimby that I didn't reconstruct, I suppose. You know, the Mullumbimby has an IGA, it has a great health food shop. It does have a community garden, and all those are featured in the book. There's a wonderful nearby waterhole, which also features in the book. But I guess I just borrowed from other places at times and also just imagined some of the scenes and places and people that could occupy a place like Mullumbimby. It was inspired by Mullumbimby, but it was also very much a work of my imagination. In many ways, I made Mullumbimby more Mullumbimby than Mullumbimby actually is. It was also, you know, I've been visiting this area for many, many years. I was finished doing social work in the 80s and I did my final placement as a social worker at Lismore Women's Health Centre. So perhaps some of the memories I have of what this area used to be like many, many years ago have infused what is actually a contemporary story.
So, Lucy, tell me about your inspiration for Claire.
I guess I wanted to write the story of someone who was very different to me. So she took on a life of her own. Initially, she isn't used to fighting to protect what she believes in. And she has to learn how to do that. And I think that's an experience that many of us, particularly women, have. We're not encouraged to stand up and fight for ourselves. So I guess that's her narrative arc, really, that she learns to be assertive and she learns to fight. So what was my inspiration for her? I think she's followed a journey that's been a little bit like mine, where I've, over the years, have learned to be more assertive and have learned to stand up more for what I believe in. And other women I know have had to do the same. So I guess she's inspired by many women I know and by my own changes I've had to make as a woman.
Yeah. Was it any coincidence that she was a clairvoyant, Claire the clairvoyant?
That arose from play, I suppose. You know, I had, as I said, I had a lot of fun writing this novel. I wrote it at a time when the world seemed to be in fairly serious trouble. And so, again, I gave my imagination full rein and I decided that normality could be transcended, you know, that things could happen in the book that wouldn't happen in real life. And I guess, you know, like all of us, I'm interested in, you know, the great mystery of what happens to those we love when they die. Are they still with us in any sense? I wanted to explore that, but I wanted to have fun exploring it.
Yeah. Speaking about having fun, I love the detail that you included about Claire's tarot readings. How much of this was based on your own knowledge and interest? And did you have to do any research to bring Claire's skills alive on the page?
I knew nothing about the tarot, absolutely nothing. It was just an idea, you know. The tarot is kind of this mysterious, mystical thing that I, as I said, I knew nothing about. So I did a course with Alexis Murphy, who's a tarot teacher in Sydney. I think it was during lockdown, so it was an online course. I bought a few books and I bought a set of cards and I played. And I, unfortunately, I've got a terrible memory. So even though I'd love to be using the tarot with friends and having fun with it, I can never remember what the cards mean. I always have to have a book beside me. But yeah, so I'm not a tarot reader. And I know a lot of people really enjoy the tarot and get a lot from it. But I'm not one of those people. It lent itself to the themes of the story really well. Yeah, so it was just fun. It was a fun thing to pursue. And I think a lot of people seek out tarot readers and tarot readings, often because they're looking for meaning, but sometimes just to have fun.
Yeah, indeed. As I have on many occasions sought out a tarot reader. What does my future hold indeed?
I think, you know, people look to the tarot perhaps more than ever. Fortune telling is a very ancient art. I've written a post about it on my blog. You know, fortune tellers appear in Shakespeare and in medieval art, and you know, they're often despised, but certainly in societies where there was no counselling and not a lot of support for people who were struggling and suffering. Hopefully sometimes they were of help to people. They were often persecuted in jails. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation. The history of fortune telling and tarot reading is fascinating and complex.
The book is told from two points of view. We have Claire and Leo. Whilst it's clear that Claire is in touch with her intuitive side, with the gift of her mother's tarot reading passed down to her along with the precious moonstone that she has, Leo is a bit of a skeptic, isn't he?
He is. And Claire's the tarot reader and she believes in the tarot, but nothing out of the ordinary really happens to Claire. Whereas Leo has lots of very strange experiences that, as a man who's committed to rationality and science, you know, he really doesn't know how to handle them. And he starts to think that he's going mad. And I guess you need to read the book to find out whether that's actually the case or not. But certainly he's haunted by these experiences. It's very, very challenging for him. He also has a very, very sad past that he's been very affected by and that makes him very wary of seeking out another relationship.
Yeah, and I was going to say that, you know, whilst he is a very lovely character and I really enjoyed getting to know him during the course of reading this novel, but he was holding on to some very heavy guilt. So I wondered, Lucy, how did you get inside his head?
Well, I've worked as a social worker and I'm very, very careful not to ever mine my former clients' stories. It just feels very unethical to ever use anything that was any personal confidential information that was ever presented to me. I'm certainly familiar with regret and guilt, as most people are, and I guess I came across those emotions, experiences often in the course of my work as well. So it was kind of easy to understand what that might be like from the inside. You know, terrible things happen and accidents happen and good people take responsibility for things that are not actually their own fault. You know, that's a very common experience. So my personal and professional experience came into that a little bit.
Yeah, I wondered about that, your experience as a social worker. And I wondered if that bled into or fed into other parts of the book as well.
Hopefully, you know, there's a big message in there about regret and, you know, finding ways of dealing with regret and sadness and grief and loss. So I guess, you know, some of that's personal experience. Again, some of that's professional experience. I was trying to write away from my professional life rather than into it. And as I said, really very much safeguarding the stories that had been presented to me by the people that I saw as a social worker. But I guess perhaps I've been exposed to sad situations more than some people have been. And perhaps that, although it's a really fun book and a light book, and I wouldn't say it's a sad book, you know, I hope it's a joyful story. There's some perhaps insight that I've gained from my work that I was trying to share in the book. I think that's probably the best way to express it. Yeah. My intention was never for anybody to feel weighed down by reading this book, but hopefully people, you know, it brings some light and some joy into their day. That's my hope for the book.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, I understand that on your visits to the North Coast and Mullumbimby over the years, you witnessed a change in the area and that this informed one of the subplots of Mystic Ridge. And Claire is quite concerned about the possibility of the rainforest around her home being demolished, along with the destruction of an endangered species of golden quandong. Can you tell us more about this, Lucy, and why you wanted to include it in the novel?
Well, Claire's a very unlikely environmental activist. You know, Claire just wants to live a quiet life, as most of us do, but things start to happen around her that mean that she's really forced into action, which is common in stories. You know, the characters are almost always forced into action. I guess I have a background that's a little bit further in the past than I like to admit as an environmental activist. So I do really worry. I worry about climate change as many people do, but in Australia specifically, the contribution of land clearing to the climate crisis. So it's, you know, I certainly wasn't, again, didn't want to be heavy-handed about that, but I was trying to convey what a precious environment we do have and how important it is to do everything that we can to preserve it. And I guess also that we can't do it alone, you know, that we need to work together. So there's a lot of, as in most rural romances, there's a lot of emphasis on community and warmth between friends and support and looking after each other. So Claire doesn't have to do what she does on her own. She gets a lot of help along the way. So an environmental message and also a message about community. But when I say message, you know, that's such a loaded word. I certainly didn't want to be hammering people over the head with these ideas. They're just ideas that were really in the back of my mind when I was writing the book.
Yeah. I alluded to you creating a rural romance subgenre in the writing of this book, something that I didn't actually come up with, but which someone suggested to you as quote, end quote, enviro romance. Do you think this can become a trend?
Well, Penelope Janu writes romances with an environmental theme. I know there have been some, perhaps more, again, going back to literary fiction, I can't think of the names of the books, but there have been a couple of perhaps more mainstream romances published with a bit of an environmental theme. So, yeah, I think it could become a genre because people don't want to be preached to, you know. Well, this is what I like to do. I like to read books that make me think but don't hammer me over the head with the writer's ideas about how the world should be. So I think romance has enormous potential to go down that path. And I like to think it is a new, well, not a new subgenre, but it's a subgenre that others could expand on, could explore and expand on.
I've often said that romance writers are at the forefront of drawing attention to different issues in society. Yeah, romance writers just seem to be able to bring that to the fore, to the collective conscious of readers in a way that, as you say, isn't heavy-handed and people are learning about interesting issues faced by modern society in a lighthearted way.
Yeah, it's interesting at romance writers' conferences, because I've been a member for a few years now, there are so many conversations about diversity and inclusion and consent. You know, people take this stuff really seriously. They're probably ahead of the rest of society in some ways, which is contrary to what is often believed about romance writers. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, Claudine.
Now, you mentioned it earlier, but you wrote in the book about something called the Luminescence Festival, which was a festival, a convergence of music, food and dancing, and you based this on the Woodford...
Oh, it's Woodford Music Festival. So there's a lot of music. That's another thing I really wanted to get across. There's a lot of music in the book because I love music. The Woodford Festival, I think it's still called the Woodford Folk Festival, is a very, very large music festival, well, music and circus and everything else festival held just north of Brisbane between Christmas and New Year. every year, although I think it did miss a year during COVID. And it's such an important festival that prime ministers and former prime ministers always come. So Anthony Albanese showed up this year. We've had Bob Hawke used to come every year. Malcolm Turnbull was there. Julia Gillard was there. I mean, not every year, but they've certainly made appearances. And it's a wonderful, wonderful festival, lots of colour and vibrancy and again, community, lots of community. I wrote the book when I was perimenopausal and I just couldn't cope with summer heat. So I just decided to move everything. In fact, all the action takes place in winter because I just couldn't deal with it. I find it difficult to deal with the heat at Woodford. A lot of the festival events that happen in the book actually have happened at Woodford.
It sounded like a wonderful place to visit. I'm quite keen now to go.
Oh, you'd love it, Claudine. You'd absolutely love it. It's so different to anything else I've ever been to, this festival. It's so much work is put into it. You know, there are artworks everywhere. You know, there are street parades. Oh, there's beautiful food. There's beautiful music. Oh, it's just everything is just fantastic. It's definitely worth a visit. Highly recommend it.
Fantastic.
And great inspiration for a book.
Indeed. Now, Lucy, I think I mentioned it before we started recording, but one of the loveliest aspects of this book was the cast of colourful, fun characters that you created, along with their alternative names, which gave us the flavour of the area in which you set it. Names like Poppy Moon, Misty Blue, Harmony and Indigo. Not only were these characters brilliantly drawn, but definitely added to the sense of community which Claire had to draw on in her fight to save her home. Was this something you were particularly interested in portraying in this book?
I was, because I lived in share houses in my 20s and, you know, just had such a wonderful sense of community when I lived in those houses. You know, I've had a very long-term and treasured group of friends from that era and, of course, have other friends from more recent times in my life. But I think the importance of friendship in supporting each other in achieving anything in the world, it just can't be understated. I guess I was drawing on my own experiences again there of having friends who are wonderful and eccentric and contribute greatly to my life. And I wanted to celebrate that in the book. So hopefully I've been able to do that, even though the characters in the book are not my friends. they're quite different. But yeah, they're important. And Claire opens her home to one of these characters, even though it's quite stressful having this, I wouldn't even say she's a friend, her neighbour come and stay with her. You know, that's important too, I think, especially at times like this when life is pretty tough for a lot of people.
And you mentioned earlier that they were inspired by real life people.
I guess what happens with me is that somebody just for some reason will make an impression upon me, you know, when I'm open to this. You know, I'll just notice that someone has a quirk or a characteristic that is unusual or something I'm not familiar with. And I'll start with that and then build on it. And then they take on a life of their own and they're totally different to the person that originally inspired the character in the end. I guess as a writer, it helps to be open to people and to be curious and to be excited about others and to observe them, not in an unpleasant way, but in a kind of joyful and curious way, you know, just to celebrate people. You know, I've really enjoyed putting some of these strange quirks that people have into my writing.
It's fantastic. I loved them all. Now, Lucy, you and I first met at the Romance Writers Conference in Fremantle last year. I think that was the first time we'd actually met in real life.
I did your wonderful workshop on how to present for a podcast. It was such a great workshop, Claudia.
That's really kind of you. I've met so many wonderful people at and through RWA. So what I wanted to ask you is, what do you think about the RWA and how has it contributed to your journey to publication?
I'm not sure that I would have been published without them, to be honest. So I first attended my first RWA conference in 2017 after doing a workshop at Writing New South Wales with Anne Gracie, who's a very well-known and well-respected and wonderful romance writer and teacher. She's a very gifted teacher. And she encouraged everyone who did her romance writing course to join the romance writers. So I did. Their workshops, both at the conference and online, really helped me understand how to write, not just romance, but just how to write generally and how to structure a book. I'd done courses before, but I'd never really learned much about structure. And then they provided the opportunity to pitch. I pitched to Rachel Donovan from Harlequin, although in the end, my agent, Alexandra Nullus, became involved. You know, that pitch was really critical for me. And I'm very grateful to RWA for giving me that opportunity. And in fact, I've now become the pitching coordinator for the upcoming conference because I want to give other people or support other people in taking that opportunity as well. And I'm hoping, you know, that at least some of those people who are pitching have the chance to publish as I did. It's a wonderful organization. You know, I'm now on the conference organizing committee. I went on a writer's retreat recently with a couple of people, women that I met on that committee. It's just been great. And it's just a very organized, very well organized, very professional organization. And it's been absolutely wonderful for me. And I can't speak highly enough of RWA. So I'd recommend that people join if they're interested in writing romance or even just writing books with romantic elements in them. There's also competitions. I forgot to mention the competitions. And this book started when I entered an RWA competition and I found my voice through RWA. You know, I perhaps I would still be writing Misery Lit and getting nowhere if it wasn't for RWA. So yeah, very grateful.
Well, you've answered quite a few of the questions that I had lined up next. I was going to ask you, before joining RWA, had you thought about writing romance, or did this kind of solidify your decision? But I think I'm hearing you say that through RWA, you actually found your voice.
That's right. I really tried to find it before then, but I'd put characters in situations and everything that would ever happen to them would be so bleak and so awful. You know, they'd be looking in the mirror and the mirror would virtually crack because they were so unhappy. So, yeah, RWA just helped me lighten up. And also, the other thing that they did was help me understand that writing's an art, but it's also a craft and it's also a business, I suppose. And they're really good at teaching you how to promote your work, especially when you know, again, as a social worker, I'm certainly not used to self-promotion. Yeah, they've just been great in so many ways.
Lucy, as you know, there are many writers who listen to this podcast, and given your recent experiences, apart from joining RWA, I wondered if you had any tips to writers who are currently trying to get their novels published.
Currently trying to get their novels published, I guess, pitch them, grab, you know, the Australian Society of Authors and RWA and other organisations offer pitching opportunities. But in terms of writing the novel, I'd say a few things. And one is play, you know, improvise. It is like drama improvisation, I think, writing a book. You know, you just need to. I discovered that letting my imagination stray into areas that even surprised me was just really fun and made the book twist and turn in ways that I didn't even expect. So that was great. Keep your writing idols close. If I'm ever uninspired, I just find a writer that I really admire and read some of their work, and then it's easier to return to the page. The main tip really is to play and to be open and curious, as I said earlier, about people too, and to be open to surprises. You can surprise yourself, but other people can surprise you as well, and just take note of the things that you notice in the world that feel a little bit magical and unexpected.
I love it. Thanks for sharing those. Lucy, if listeners wanted to learn more about you and your book, where can they find you?
I've got a website, lucylever.com, and I'm also on Instagram. I think it's lucy.lever.writer, and I'm on Facebook. But I spend most of my time on social media, probably on Instagram. Would really love to hear how people out there are finding the book if they get a chance to read it. So really encourage you to follow me and I'll or get in contact somehow via my website or via Instagram.
Brilliant. It's been so much fun chatting with you today about Mystic Ridge. I wish you every success with it and the others that will no doubt follow. Thank you very much for joining me on Talking Aussie Books today.
Thank you so much for having me, Claudine. It's been an absolute delight talking to you.
That's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please drop me a line via my webpage at claudinetonellis.com, via Instagram, Facebook or Twitter. Alternatively, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Google Podcasts. Until next time, happy reading.